Today I'm going to read to you the gay BCs. A is for ally, a friend who is there to stand up for you with strength, love, and care. B is for bi, you can shout it out loud. I like boys and girls, and that makes me proud. C is for coming out, you're ready to share. What you feel deep inside, it's okay to be scared. D is for drag, you can strut and dance in clothes that you love, dresses, heels, or pants. E is for equality, we're on the same team. We all have the right to love, hope, and dream. F is for family, related or found. They'll stick by your side through your ups and your downs. G is for gay. It's a word that implies you're a girl who likes girls or a guy who likes guys. H is for hope. Dream up a life you'll love. The sky is the limit. Shoot for the stars above. I is for intersex. Some are born with the parts of both a boy and a girl. Both bodies are works of art. J is for joy. You can sing, dance, and play. Find moments of sunshine in each and every day. K is for kiki. When friends come together to catch up on news, gossip, and weather. L is for lesbian. It's love and affection between two special girls who share a connection. M is for mountain. The peaks that you'll move with strength and courage from deep inside you. N is for non-binary. You don't identify as just being a girl or just being a guy. O is for orientation. It's a balance between who you are, who you love, and how you want to be seen. P is for pan. You connect with a vibe. No matter the gender, it's about what's inside. O is for queer, an inclusive term. It's used to show pride, unite, and affirm. R is for respect. It's the right decision to treat everyone fairly. Make it your mission. S is for sachet, a confident, fierce stride to show yourself with attitude and pride. T is for trans. It's a brave step to take to live as the gender you know is innate. U is for unique. There is no one like you. Embrace who you are and love what you do. V is for Vogue. Time to strike a pose, dance to the music, and put on a show. W is for wonder with so much to know. Always ask questions to think, learn, and grow. X is for X. You can write it down when you don't prefer M or F as your noun. Y is for you. Brave, creative, and strong. You are special and loved. You'll always belong. Z is for zest. Be bold and live free. Magic awaits you wherever you be.
Yeah. Yeah. All those things, huh? Good afternoon, folks, or good morning, depending on where you are. This is Pete Hendrickson. And this is going to be a show that is going to challenge and very likely offend some folks. The preceding was a reading of the book Gay BCs by a young woman on YouTube that's garnered thousands and thousands of hits in the year that it's been up. A lot of people watching that little reading. I can't imagine why, but nonetheless, there it is. And it is a reflection of the fact that our culture today is beset with transformational challenges. That is to say, challenges offered by people who wish to transform our culture into what it thus far is not, in service to their own agendas. We're going to talk about that at more considerable length a little later in the show. My guest today in the second hour is Dr. Erwin Lutzer, who has written a book on the transformation of society, and particularly from a Christian perspective, but in general with regard to the kind of aggressive proposition that our social structure needs to change and become more tolerant of the normalization of what in the past had been viewed as psychologically problematic positions and perspectives. And so in the second hour, we're gonna get into that at great length with Dr. Lutzer. In the meantime, I'm going to challenge some folks' perspectives on a couple of other fronts dealing with some issues in current events. And so bear with me here on that front. Most particularly the recent G7 meeting and the summit between Joe Biden and Vladimir Putin that took place a couple of days ago, all of which requires a few comments. First and foremost, the manner in which the G7 meeting and the summit with Vladimir Putin was used as a foil for attacking Russia and maintaining some myths about Russian behavior over the last number of years and with an eye towards maintaining bad relations between Russia and the United States. A very dangerous situation in my mind, and also one that's unfair. Essentially, as everyone listening knows, during the course of the Trump administration in particular, Russia was selected as a villainous figure as a mechanism for tarnishing the Trump presidency, tarnishing the Trump's election in 2016. His presidency ongoing during its period. And in an effort to essentially neutralize his efforts, his administrative efforts in foreign policy, especially in a lot of ways, and in domestic policy as well. The idea was to simply neuter Donald Trump by hanging around his neck this notion that he was a beneficiary of Russian election hacking. It was literally proposed by the Democrats and maintained for years that the 2016 election was fraudulent, and that it was so because the Russians had compromised our election process. They had influenced the outcome of the election. They had hacked into the DNC's email server and released emails from Hillary Clinton and other people involved in the Democratic National Committee, and that they were villains, and that Russia was villainous in other ways as well, particularly related to things like Crimea, the annexation of Crimea, and Russia's participation in the war in Syria. Almost all of which was patently untrue, and in the case of the proposition of election, Russian interference in the U.S. electoral process and so forth, has never been supported by any evidence. And in fact, the nature of the efforts to investigate that and establish evidence demonstrates, on the contrary, that there in fact was no such interference in any meaningful way, and certainly none on the basis of a state interference. There almost certainly was Russian opportunism on the part of Russians, which is not to say Russian opportunism. That would imply that it was a state-operated affair, but just opportunism on the part of Russian people living in Russia who took advantage of the electoral conflict in the U.S. prior to the 2016 vote, and afterwards, after the vote as well, to try and make money by tickling people's very polarized positions on as whether they were supporting Donald Trump or supporting Hillary Clinton. These Russian operatives, these were just private actors, or at least every bit of evidence that has emerged has indicated that these were private actors who simply were doing routine fake news and trolling operations to bring eyeballs to their websites or their posts and to get access to advertising dollars and other financial benefits from this process. So they did it on a very minor scale. In the larger scheme of things, Twitter, for instance, or maybe it was Facebook, I guess the Facebook posts that ran trillions of posts during the period in question, and these Russian hackers or Russian trolls posted 100,000 total, had 100,000 total views of their material when the overall traffic produced trillions of views. It was completely insignificant, completely meaningless. And the idea that it was an attempt was made to leverage it into a an attack on the legitimacy of the Trump presidency was outrageous. And interestingly, there's an enormous amount of hypocrisy in that now that the Republicans are complaining about the outcome of the 2020 election, and in their case, with an awful lot of support or supporting empirical evidence anyway behind the proposition, things like 19 of 20 or 18 of 19 bellwether counties all voting for Trump in the past election, and yet Trump being declared the loser, the bizarre shenanigans at 4:30 in the morning the day after the election in key key specific precincts of key states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Wisconsin, and Arizona, for instance, where the rest of the country as a whole plainly voted for Trump or gave Trump the majority. A lot of very questionable things about the situation. And at this point, perhaps we'll see some outcome from the audits that are forensic audits that are slowly getting rolling. We have one going on in Maricopa County in Arizona right now that we don't know what the results are going to be and probably won't for several weeks at least. Georgia is about to begin the same sort of process in Fulton County. And just yesterday, activists in Michigan delivered something on the order of 7,000 affidavits and petitions to the state legislature demanding that the state legislature initiate a forensic audit in Michigan as well. Maybe we'll see something that produces some concrete data on that front. But in the meantime, the hypocrisy of the claims that by Democrats that this election was a perfect election and unsullied by any bad behavior, while at about the same time maintaining that in 2016 that election was illegitimate and the product of electoral fraud and manipulation by Russia in particular, is staggering. But there it is. So on that front, I want to share a couple of things about the recent history of Russia that are at odds with the narrative, the mainstream narrative about Russia that is that helps support the proposition of Russia as this evil actor and both in 2016 and ongoing, which is maintained by interests that really want to have an adversary in Russia and want to be bellicose towards it for other reasons. One of them, specifically the history of Crimea, one of the things that is made much of and that Joe Biden was supposed to have accosted Vladimir Putin over was the alleged seizure of Crimea in 2014, unacknowledged by those pushing that narrative is that Crimea was actually a part of Russia since 1783, several hundred years, and is populated by a Russian ethnic population and has been for several hundred years. The only reason Crimea ever became nominally an element of Ukraine was because Nikita Khrushchev, when he took over the premiership in the Soviet Union in the 50s, as just a political gesture, declared Crimea to have been given to or annexed by Ukraine, which was also part of the Soviet Union. And so it was a meaningless gesture in terms of actual geopolitics. It was done for internal purposes and out of a sense of whimsy, apparently, by Khrushchev as much as anything else. It was not, at that time, with everything being in the Soviet Union, not meant to be a change of any kind and again, purely a nominal thing. But when the Soviet Union broke up in the early 1990s, Crimea at that point, you know, sort of on paper anyway, had become part of Ukraine and was treated that way. But when the Obama administration fomented a coup in Ukraine in 2014, the Maidan coup, and put Nazis in power, Ukrainian Nazis in power, who are dedicated enemies of Russians and ethnic Russians, so and therefore dedicated enemies of the population of Crimea, the Crimeans held a referendum and overwhelmingly voted to be annexed by Russia, which Russia then accomplished. And so the proposition that the Russian annexation of Crimea was some sort of crime is completely wrong. It's a false history, and it is maintained purely for the sake of trying to tar Russia with this alleged offense. Not true at all. Another issue that was raised by the Biden camp in the summit with the Soviet Union, or summit with Vladimir Putin, was over allegations of cyber crimes. These include some of the ones that I've already spoken of, the allegations of election interference and so forth. Also, the allegation of Russia hacking into the DNC to reveal the Hillary Clinton related emails. Back in the summer of 2016, as well as things like the recent Colonial Pipeline shutdown, which is kind of thrown into the mix, and people are expected to associate that with the same process, even though that was plainly just a criminal operation, ransomware affair, had nothing to do with the Russian government, and it never really was claimed to have had anything to do with it, but nonetheless. It's hung out there in the expectation that people will associate that with the same allegations of Russian cybercrimes, Russian state cybercrimes. And I want to point out the hypocrisy of this, or irony and hypocrisy of this accusation being made when just 3 weeks ago, not even 3 weeks ago, two and a half weeks ago, it was revealed that the NSA, with the help of the Danish intelligence service, has been spying on, in other words, committing cybercrimes against European governments for years. I'll read a little quick summary of that from the Guardian newspaper. This is the May 31st, 2021 edition of the Guardian. With the headline, Denmark helped U.S. spy on Angela Merkel and European allies, reports that Denmark's military intelligence agency helped the U.S. to spy on leading European politicians, including the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, have sparked concern and demands for an explanation in European capitals. Danish public broadcaster Danmarks Radio said the U.S. National Security Agent, whose alleged tapping of Merkel's phone was disclosed by Edward Snowden in 2013, also used the Danish Defense Intelligence Service to spy on officials in Sweden, Norway, and France. The allegations are contained in an internal classified report on the Danish Intelligence Service's role in the surveillance partnership agreement with the NSA from 2012 to 2014, the broadcaster said, citing 9 unidentified sources familiar with the investigation. And the article goes on to detail things further. But the point, of course, is that the accusations, the completely unsupported accusations of Russian cybercrimes, Russian state cybercrimes, being thrown out as a gauntlet to Vladimir Putin, when the U.S. has just been revealed to have done yet further cyber criminal activity against other countries, other governments, particularly some of the governments in that were attending the G7 conference, is really I don't know, entertaining, I guess, is a word for it. So one other thing about the hacking accusations, of Russian cybercrime accusations, I want to remind everyone of the WikiLeaks, Julian Assange's WikiLeaks organization revelations of the Vault 7 material, which included the CIA's Marble Framework project. That being a software development producing the means by which the CIA could mimic Russian fingerprints on malware and cybercrime materials that they themselves produced. Very significant thing to have in your head whenever you're faced with allegations of foreign cybercrime anywhere in the world.
Been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone, or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com, or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour. There's something really fun and exciting about discovering products that make life more pleasant and enjoyable. Well, Miracle 2 soaps definitely fit that description. The shelves at the supermarket are packed with soaps and cleansers that are full of chemicals that slowly destroy our health and the environment. Miracle 2 products are all natural, like the green soap that can replace your bath, laundry, household soaps, and cleaning products. And please try Miracle 2 skin lotion. It's quickly absorbed and not greasy like all those other mass-produced lotions. Miracle 2 moisturizer is full of fabulous oils and emollients that leave the skin healthy and baby soft. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. Just call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. You'll learn why so many people say it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Okay, we're back. And before we continue, I want to emphasize to everyone the virtues of the Power Mall and PowerMall.com. Great products, great people. Important if you're in the market for any of the sort of things that that can be found at the Power Mall, please make use of it as your vendor. It's important. It helps keep this show on the air. It helps keep us able to speak to you, and much is much appreciated. So, all right. With that, I want to remind you all at the beginning of the next hour, I'm going to have on as my guest, Dr. Erwin Lutzer, the author of a new book, We Will Not Be Silenced, Responding Courageously to Our Culture's Assault on Christianity. And that is a piece that that is oriented towards a Christian perspective, an evangelical Christian perspective, but at the same time is using that as a launch point in large degree to analyze and discuss the efforts on the part of folks like that young woman that read the Gay BCs to the world that I shared at the very beginning of the show here, trying to transform the world in service to her agenda and that agenda. And it's going to be an interesting conversation, I suspect. So please stay with me for that. And with that as the sort of the theme, I want to read to you an article by Declan Leary, a writer on the American Conservative, that I have had sitting on my desk for actually a couple of months at this point, as will become clear in part by some of the content. It's a little old, but it's a really well written and important piece, I think, and it's going to go to some of what Dr. Lutzer and I are going to be talking about, and is going to relate to that Gay BCs thing that which it itself will have offended some listeners, and which my reading of which and highlighting of which will have offended some other listeners possibly, So let me just get right into this article so that we've got time before we bring on Dr. Lutzer to get this in. The article is titled "Why Dead Naming Matters," and the subtitle or the summary line is: "When we allow the other side of to set the terms of discussion and police ourselves to conform to them, the battle is already lost." And again, this is by Declan Leary. Richard Levine was born in 1957 in Wakefield, Massachusetts, an affluent suburb 20 minutes north of Boston. He went to Hebrew school and had a bar mitzvah before heading off to the very tony, very expensive, all-boys Belmont Hill School, where he played as a linebacker on the football team. From there, he went to Harvard as an undergrad before heading south for med school at Tulane. While still in school, he married classmate Martha Peasley. The couple would go on to have two children, one boy and one girl. Richard's career got off to a running start with a residency and fellowship at Mount Sinai Medical Center in Manhattan. From there, he moved to Penn State Hershey Medical Center, where he established himself firmly as a leader in his field, building both an adolescent medicine division and an eating disorders clinic. But even with a loving family and a meaningful career, something was amiss in Richard Levine's world. 8 years after his move to Pennsylvania, the doctor began to see a therapist. Another 8 years after that, he publicly announced his decision to transition to presenting as a woman. Now, a full decade after that announcement, Richard, now Rachel, stands as Joe Biden's nominee for the United States Assistant Secretary for Health. And I'm going to break in here to say that since then, Rachel, has been confirmed as the United States Assistant Secretary for Health. So it is. The broader situation has evolved dramatically, even since Levine's 2011 transition, when about 25% of American adults identified as transgender. A mere 5 years later, that percentage had more than doubled, and now the nation's potential first trans federal official awaits confirmation by the U.S. Senate. Again, that confirmation happened. This would have been unimaginable a few years ago, as even supporters acknowledge, boasting of Levine's historic nomination. In fact, long after gay and lesbian politicians broke into legislatures across the country, the idea of a transgender official remained decidedly taboo. In 1992, for instance, Althea Garrison, a black conservative Republican and perennial candidate for state-level office, squeaked out a narrow election to the Massachusetts House of Representatives. 2 days later, the Boston Herald reported that Garrison had been known in a past life in Georgia as A.C. Garson and as a man. Garson/Garrison was defeated by a 10-point margin in the next cycle, and despite continued efforts, totaling 32 campaigns to date, the one-time legislator has never managed to win another election. The glass ceiling sustained cracks at times, but never showed any serious signs of breaking. As late as 2017, only three elected transgender officials and a smattering of appointed officials were serving anywhere in the country, according to a glowing Washington Post profile of Levine, then serving as Pennsylvania's physician general. To understand how the situation has developed at such a breakneck pace, we have to realize how rapidly and readily social conservatives have ceded ground to the progressive left. Consider the terms of the argument. None of them are ours. Even conservative writers, when addressing what was once a controversial subject, tend only to employ the preferred pronouns and new chosen names of the individuals in question. Dead naming, they know, is a grave and unforgivable sin. It would be practically unthinkable for any respectable journalist to use he or him when referring to Dr. Levine, to say nothing of the gendered birth name Richard. This proscription results in bizarre constructions like, "She has two children from his marriage to Martha," and this from the Washington Post, which defies parody even as it stabs at something like humor. "The state office where Rachel Levine works as the Keystone State's top doctor is lined with family photos, including one perched high on a shelf that was taken on a vacation long ago, when her children were young and she was a broad-shouldered man named Richard." Words matter, and not just because it's nearly impossible to win a fight in which every rule is set by your opponent. In practice, using the other side's terms amount to, or at least appears as, conceding the substance of their points. Every time we call Dr. Levine she, or even Rachel, we reinforce the belief that Richard Levine, linebacker, husband, two times a father, can become Rachel Levine, female public health authority, by sheer force of will and against the dictates of his body. We deny reality for the sake of civility. We suspend what we know to be true, that the human person is a hylomorphic creature, a union of body and soul that is not, and is not meant to be, divided against itself. For what? For fear of being called bigots by the editors of Vox? The semantic concession is tied to a tangible loss, or rather, a long string of losses, in the policy arena. The conservative mainstream has adopted a general position of this far but no further, acknowledging transgender claims either as legitimate or as a losing battle, and only attempting to limit, as they retreat, the enforcement of those claims in the public square. Thus, we find ourselves talking not about whether troubled people should be given medical assistance in mutilating themselves based on feelings, but about whether those people, after said mutilation, should use the men's or the women's restroom. Not about whether young men and adolescent boys whose self-image has been savaged by incessant attacks on masculinity should be encouraged to abandon the masculine altogether, only about whether their abandonment should be hurried along medically before or after puberty, and whether or not they should be allowed to run varsity track on the girls' team. There is never a substantive question of whether we should concede to the left's agenda, only a procedural one of how we should go about it. Conservatives must reclaim some hastily abandoned ground. The question is not whether Doug should be allowed onto the field hockey team, but whether Doug can become Daisy in the first place. He can't. The best and the most honest way to quell the totalizing power of the transgender agenda is not to trim away at its edges, but to take aim at its root. We have let this twisted tree grow unimpeded, and even watered it when we found the time, and now it's standing off keel in the Capitol, ready to topple and do some real damage. We can only blame ourselves that Rand Paul's inquiry as to whether Dr. Levine would support hormone therapy, puberty blockers, or mutilative surgery for minors confused about gender has met accusations of transphobia and extremism. Never mind that shielding children from harmful treatment in service of a political agenda is the absolute least we should expect of a respectable right in the debate over transgenderism. Conservatives have so fully abdicated our role here that a mild, moderate presentation of the conservative position is now denounced almost universally as miles beyond the pale. Nobody can pretend to be surprised that Ryan T. Anderson's book got banned by Amazon. For years, we've granted tacit credence to the left's belief that trans skepticism is a heresy against the ever-changing soft science of ever-changing genders, incurring late sententia, excommunication, from the ranks of respectable, intelligent people. We invite them to trample on us, then squeal in disbelief when they take us up on the offer. No Republican senator has even thought to suggest that a man who is convinced he is a woman might have personal troubles that disqualify him from holding a high-ranking position in the nation's public health apparatus. The mere idea that any of them could, after years of giving up on an entirely winnable issue, is laughable. We have admitted to the world that Richard is Rachel, and Bruce is Caitlin, and everything they're telling you is entirely correct, but please don't let them act on it too much, though we can't explain to you why you shouldn't. Voltaire got very little right, but one warning still rings true. Those who can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities. We might find the atrocities both much less common and much more easily combated if we could manage, at the very least, to keep the obvious absurdities out of our own mouths. And amen, I think, to Declan Leary in that excellent article. We have done exactly that as a culture, as a modern culture. We have allowed our the opponents of what has been take control of the dialogue. And as Leary says, when you have conceded the terms of the debate to your opponent, you have conceded everything. Everything can be controlled through the use of language. This is something George Orwell spent a great deal of time on, and we all ought to be very conscious of the wisdom and insight into Orwell's observations. We would be probably if 1984 were still required reading in government schools as it once was, almost surprisingly. But up until the 70s, certainly maybe even past the 70s and barely into the 80s, there still were required readings for high school students. I don't believe that that's so much the case any longer. I don't have personal experience in that. My wife and I homeschooled our kids, and so our kids read Orwell. But I don't think that too many others in the most recent generations have done so. And it's a shame because it takes that understanding of how manipulation of language, newspeak, how significant that is, how powerful a weapon that is in the hands of people who wish to modify and distort the culture. If you can give words different meanings, if you can compel the adoption of certain terminology, certain kinds of language in public discourse, you can spin the direction of the outcomes of that discourse to your advantage. And the problem, one of the problems that we have, I think, is that the conservative perspective tends to be polite. It tends to be respectful. And it believes in the honesty of its interlocutors. Conservatives talk to people, they assume that those people are going to speak honestly and sincerely and not manipulatively and with craft. And that's a terrible, terrible deficit for those conservative debaters to impose upon themselves, because it simply isn't true. Often enough, and this isn't to say that every non-conservative debater or communicant is untruthful or insincere, but on a large scale, there is a cadre of leadership, a leadership cadre in the circles of those trying to change society to fit the image that they prefer, to produce the sort of modified terminology and language preferences and tools that will steer things in their favored direction, and that is fundamentally dishonest. And the ground troops, so to speak, that drink from the well produced by this cadre of leadership ends up equipped with all of that, and automatically uses the language that they we see it in terms like equity, which is completely not misunderstood or misused, misrepresented by the people who use it. Diversity is another one that is phenomenally misused. Diversity, in fact, is a transparently misused one. And obviously it is meant to be diversity of appearance with complete conformity of perspective. In terms of what diversity is valued and is considered acceptable by people on the side of the debate that are enthused about diversity in general or make much of it. It's a problem. The conservative side, the side that represents the existing face of Western civilization, or the traditional face of Western civilization, is polite. Perhaps that's, you know, politeness because they're speaking from a, or had been up till recently speaking from a position of strength and therefore didn't feel any need to cut corners. They were wealthy enough, so to speak, to be magnanimous, in the discourse, and to, assume the best of the, people with whom they were debating or speaking. So, you know, it may be that that just comes naturally. It may be because the, part of our, part of the culture that, that conservatives are defending, has respect wrapped into it. It's built into it. It is, our culture is intended to be respectful of all views, of all perspectives. This country is founded on the principle of, tolerance for differing viewpoints. That's the kind of diversity that actually has the meaning that term ought to have in American, discourse. It is diversity of opinion. It is here, you can have any view on anything as long as you agree with only one thing, and that is that everyone is entitled to have their freedom of view on all other things. The only thing that you are required to conform to in America is that everyone's right to their belief system, to their perspective, to their freedom of action, short of hindering other people in their exercise of their freedoms, is acceptable. So from that perspective, conservatives and the defenders of traditional Western civilization, liberal Western civilization, again, they come at things from a deficit. They come at things not intending and not equipped to be in a knife fight over the situation. They expect to be in a polite, rational, sober discussion and presentation of viewpoints and defenses of those viewpoints. And that is not the nature of the scrap that they are in with the insurgency, with the oftentimes leftist insurgency, sometimes actually rightist as well. You know, fascism has its boosters, and they also are you know, put pressure on the actual traditional Western civilization center that is being defended by real conservatism. So I think Larry's premise is 100% correct. I think that everything that he says needs to be kept in mind. We can't concede the ground of language. We owe it to ourselves as those who rely on true liberalism, the liberalism of Western civilization, classical liberalism, to put the better name on it, the concepts that inform the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution, and, you know, basically our entire existing structure of law and society in this country. We have to have the confidence to defend our culture. We have to have the confidence to denounce improper, ill-founded, illegitimate, indefensible assaults on our culture. And we are awash in those ill-founded, indefensible assaults. We are awash in the lunacy. It's transparent lunacy to suggest that it is not a matter of deep mental ill health to imagine that one is living in a body that isn't the right one for them, you know, a body with a gender that isn't the right gender, that somehow a mistake was made, and one is entitled or properly should consider surgery, either through a scalpel or chemicals to fix that mistake. This is craziness. This is literal lunacy. And yet, it is celebrated and treated as normed on our mainstream media, in our schools, in politics. It resulted in Richard Levine, who calls himself Rachel and had himself modified, in keeping with this deluded notion that he, she, it, whatever, really didn't belong in a male body, despite the fact that that's what he was born in. I mean, that's his body. So anyway, with that, we're going to go to another break. Beginning next hour, Dr. Erwin Lutzer will be with me, and we'll talk about all of this from another perspective as well. Hope you stay with us.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.